I had to take some time to think about what I wanted and what I really want and thought that was right for myself was I want to amplify Asian American stories. That's such a niche thing, but it's something that's important to me. But ever since I made that statement for myself, I got Here Lies Love at the Public Theater. Soft power.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number one of The Voracious Student. I'm Denis Lambert, and I'll be your host for this podcast, and I'm very proud to open it with my dear friend, J.G. Macapugay, an amazing actress and a very special soul. Some of J.G.'s shows include Here Lies Love, Wild Goose Dreams, and Soft Power at the Public, which was a recent finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, and she also was in School of Rock on Broadway. We met doing a production of Working a year ago exactly. In this conversation, we talk about how J.G. had to get really specific about the kinds of stories she wanted to tell, and that once she did that, all those stories started to come her way. Enjoy.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, J.G. I love you.
I love you. I miss you. You look so cute with your beard. I feel like your audience should know what a cute beard you have right now.
Thanks. Yeah, audience. I have a new beard. I almost never have a beard, but I kind of like it. I'm using my middle name in this podcast too. Like I'm normally Denis Lambert, but I'm going to say I'm Denis Emile Lambert during the podcast.
That's right. Create a new identity.
Create a new identity.
Yes.
J.G., how did you get into this crazy business?
Oh my gosh. I want to say it was the Jurassic period. And I want to say it was a long time ago, but I'm so thankful that I did this because I didn't get my degree in theater or arts or anything like that. My degree was actually in advertising. I'd always sung, I'd always performed, but it was just for fun. I never actually told myself that your biggest dream of singing and performing on stage is something that you could actually do. So once college rolled around, I knew it was time to grow up. I knew it was time to like make a decision for myself and become a communications major. And I went all the way. I had interns in New York City in advertising. I got a degree in it. I went to, I was working at a beautiful boutique agency in Chicago, Illinois for 3 years. And after they started to train me to become a supervisor, I started to get super depressed because it was not something I enjoyed doing, and I was okay at it. But because I'm like friendly and positive, they were like, she can keep going. Let's train her. But I was not very good at the job, to be honest. Ask any of my advertising colleagues, they'll tell you, but she's the sweetest. Anyway, when they started to train me to be a supervisor, I got super depressed and I didn't know what to do because what I wanted to do was sing and act and dance and be on stage. And I got really caught. I actually took a leave of absence from my ad agency because I needed to get myself grounded. And during that time, a friend of mine told me about auditions for Disney World. And in my depressed stupor, I thought I would go. And what I had done while I was at the agency to stay creative was I was doing community theater. So I did like a Little Shop of Horrors in community theater, Palatine music on stage. I went to this audition. It was at the Hubbard Street Dance Company in Chicago, downtown Chicago. Ron LaRosa was the casting director. And I went in. I did my 16 bars of Take Me or Leave Me from Rent. And they hired me. They videotaped me. They contacted me a couple days later and asked me to move to Orlando, Florida, and as a singer. And I was a singer at Disney. It started out as a 6-month contract, ended up 5 years. I was there for 5 years. That's where I learned how to perform, how to handle corporate entertainment. And after a while, after those 5 years, a long while, I realized, I'm like, I could stay here. That Disney's always been a great landing pad or launching pad for your career. And I realized it was time to leave. And I made the trip to New York. I auditioned to take a summer intensive at the Neighborhood Playhouse and to study Meisner. And I loved it. I stayed in New York and then just slowly started doing regional theater and off Broadway to off Broadway to Broadway back to regionals. And I've been here ever since.
That's amazing. So one of your most recent shows in New York was Soft Power at the Public. The album is amazing. Listeners, if you haven't listened to it, sit down, pour yourself a cup of tea, and enter this incredible world. What is the show to the people who don't know it? How did you get involved with it? And what did it teach you?
I laugh only because if you ask Janine Tesori, David Henry Hwang, or really anybody that was involved with the show, the hardest question about Soft Power is, tell me what the show's about. It's a lot, and it's amazingly beautiful and at first complicated, but once you're at the theater in the seats, you get it. It was like an exploration of America's current place in the world, told through an East-West musical from China's point of view, in which a theater producer from Shanghai forges a powerful bond with Hillary Clinton.
And I was reading, like, the theater producer is a version of Anna in The King and I, and Hillary Clinton is a version of the king.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
That's David amazing.
David Henry Hwang was fascinated when he saw the recent revival of The King and I, and he found himself moved. The piece is beautiful. It's actually such a well-crafted, gorgeous piece of art, and he found himself moved in all the same places. However, he started thinking about the fact that this does seem like a white savior story. And he was bothered by elements of that and then conflicted with the sweeping story and costumes, which made him think about the concept of the delivery system in pop culture and how even if the messages are troublesome or skewed in a way that the writers and the people who put it together in a way that may not be socially responsible, the delivery system can make you believe it. So why not do a reverse King and I, because it's never truly been done for an Asian American's point of view. Hallelujah.
And speaking of the album, it was released on April 17th during the pandemic. What does the release of the album during this uniquely challenging time mean to you? And what do you think it maybe means to the Asian theater community and or the larger Asian community?
Yeah, when the album came out, and I knew that they were wondering if, you know, there were meetings with our core producers and creative team about the would it be appropriate to put a cast album out. It was so unsure. Just think about how much has changed between April and now that it's nearly the end of July. So much. People didn't want to put out content for various reasons all throughout this time. And mid-April, they thought it would be best. And I'm so thankful they did, because I hadn't seen any of my friends or hugged any of them in person in so long. So when we would have our Zoom gatherings to talk about it, and plan for it and have our reunions, it ended up being just this soothing balm for this uncertain time and gave hope. I feel like as we're going through this time of coronavirus, it's about what things can we do for ourselves and for our communities that give hope. And that cast album is an example of that. And I think for the Asian American community, they're like, hey, there are stories that are still being told right now with us in mind. I can count on one hand how many shows have Asian American stories that are produced at a high level, off Broadway, Broadway. And Soft Power, I'm so thankful to be in one of them. And the possibilities are, there are more possibilities of it in the future, as long as we have champions like the Public Theater, David Henry Hwang. What did Mr. Rogers say? Look for the helpers. There are helpers out there that are willing to take a chance. And hopefully there'll be that one day that, like, an Asian American story isn't such a big chance.
Yeah.
And that it could be positive and commercially successful.
Even in prepping for this interview, looking back on everything you've done, I was like, thank God for the Public Theater.
they are constantly trying to be inclusive and listen and be open and put together people that are from so many different backgrounds and different stories, that them being a not-for-profit theater, but so successful, are willing to take chances. And so many of their shows transfer to Broadway. So many of their shows. And to do Soft Power on the same stage where Chorus Line and Hamilton started, it's just like hallowed ground. When we were in rehearsals, I was so excited.
The ghosts are alive.
You could feel them. You could feel them. Joseph Papp among us.
Around that time, you also created your own film. I think it was your debut film.
Yeah.
Yes. It was, as creator?
Okay. Yes, as a creator, but not, it was like a collaboration. So if a creator means that, like, I helped put it together and get all the most amazing people together, then yes, because I didn't write the song. The composer of this musical short film that I created was Paula Turol. It was this Filipino immigrant song cycle that I did in the May of 2019. So it was right before you and I met. It was a dream come true, because I don't know if you've ever done this, Denise, as an artist, but your like personal artistic statement.
I have. I need to do it again, I think, but I have. I do it for projects sometimes.
As artists, I feel like because we can do everything. And I know you can do everything. You sing, dance, act, like whatever. You can do it all. All that being said, it's so easy to get lost with so many different options that are available to us. But for me, I needed to focus because there was a point in time when I was just feeling like I was going to every audition and not sure if I really wanted to go to it. And I had to take some time to think about what I wanted and what I really want. And thought that was right for myself was I want to amplify Asian American stories. That was such a niche thing, but it's something that's important to me. But ever since I made that statement for myself, I got Here Lies Love at the Public Theater, Soft Power also at the Public Theater that went to other theaters across the country. And I, with Here Lies Love, I also did that in Seattle. Last year, I did On This Side of the World, a Filipino immigrant song cycle. So I got to play myself and like an homage to my ancestors that have come here to immigrate. And one of those songs that I sang was called The Language Lesson. It's all about a term called kilig. Kilig. I want to hear you say it, kilig.
Kilig.
Did I do it okay? You did it. And what kilig means is that quick in your heartbeat step, the queasiness in your stomach feeling that you get when you're in love. And Paolo Turol wrote a song about that. And I fell in love. It was about a young student named Jenny who falls in love with her teacher. And she feels like she should tell him how she feels. I enjoyed it so much when we did it last year that I couldn't let it go. So I was thinking, I kind of want to produce this into like a musical short film video kind of thing. And I have so lucky to have collaborators. You know, you ask for something and then the universe speaks back to you. Garth Kravitz and Leah Chang, who have their production companies.
I love them both.
Oh, yay! Oh my gosh, they're fierce. And they get it done. So if you ever need any kind of collaboration, everybody, Garth Kravitz and Leah Chang, Bev's Girls Films, and Cut and Dry Films, they will have your back and get it on you to make sure you do whatever you need to get it right. And I told, they've been wanting to collaborate for years. I had not wanted to do anything because unless I had something to say, I'm not just going to put content out there. That's the thing. Like, if you want to do something in this world, if you want to say something, know that you have to have something to say. How do you want to make the world a better place? Anyway, so I asked Leah and Garth to collaborate, and they asked me what it was, and I wanted to produce this musical short film from Paolo Turol's musical about a little girl, young girl, that falls in love with her teacher. And they helped me, and we worked on it from the ideas for a few weeks, and we recorded it one day at a university in New York, and we got it done. And then we released it during the quarantine. And wasn't sure if it was appropriate, but I'm like, this is a song about love. This is a song about hope. I think we should give it a shot. And it, I got such a great response to it. And I've got this beautiful piece that I'll always have of a time that I loved last year. And it just, every time I watch it, it just gives me so much joy.
I loved it. I'm so glad you did it. It's just such an amazing example of asking for what you want and then just seeing it come flying back to you. So in this podcast, I'm hoping to draw connections between people of a wide variety of ages and at very different places in their careers. So with that in mind, I want to ask you.
I'm not telling you my age.
Oh, I would never ask. I would never ask.
A lady doesn't tell, Denis Lambeau.
You. This is so much fun.
I'm sweating.
You were in School of Rock and you worked with a lot of kids. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. And specifically, I'm interested if there was anything you wanted to pass on to them and if there was anything that they taught you.
Nice. You know, it's so funny. Like, I feel like whenever I think about School of Rock, I have to have like cognac and a cigarette.
What?
Just because, you know, I felt like, oh, I'm coming from a place of experience to work with these children. I've got things to impart on them. I've been in the business and such for such a long time. So here goes. And then I realized that they taught me so much. The fact of the matter is I made my Broadway debut with School of Rock after working so many years and no guarantee of ever being on Broadway. But doing this show with children gave me this like excited freshness. They really are looking at life for the first time in a way, and looking at theater the way I did when I first started. Just wide-eyed, exuberant, and I realized that I don't think about it anymore. I didn't think about it as much in that way because I was like, all right, I'm a professional. You do the job. You worked really hard to get on Broadway, so it's about nose to the grindstone. All right, do it. But I forgot the idea of play. And kids, they sure do play.
You know, we say, what role are you playing?
Yeah, totally.
We don't say, what role are you working? Or yeah. What role are you slaving away at?
Right, right. And remember when we were kids and like you were playing with us like boxes or something and you were very specific of how you wanted to play. Like, make sure that box goes there. Make sure that you're going to be this in this scene and then I'm going to be like this. And it was still specific and you knew like what you wanted to do, but you were playing hard as a child. And it's the same thing here, but there were the stakes and the pressure that we put on ourselves is so much heavier than when we were children. Granted, some of these shows are like million-dollar shows, you understand that. But somehow in our business, we need to find a way to remember to play and acknowledge that to put a piece of professional work out there, it takes a lot of resources and like balance out that you have to have fun and you have to play.
It's so true. I get these videos of my little nephew and he's taking stuff from outside in the garden to his little kitchen inside. And it's brilliant acting. I mean, his imagination is just so alive.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet.
And the way he tells my brother what to do, like, dad did this and this, you know, it's just adorable.
Yeah, they have opinions. That's another thing about children. They sure do have opinions. And a lot of times they're not afraid to share it. And as actors and artists among our peers, it's a healthy balance of what to do that. Sometimes kids, you also, and that's the thing, as adults, we'd have to, like when I was doing School of Rock, they needed to just be like, sometimes they're balloons that you need to kind of bring them down to earth and let them know, yeah, okay, you're still doing a million-dollar musical that you've got to behave.
This is Broadway, kids. Yes, pull it together.
Yeah.
So we met about a year ago doing working at Berkshire Theater Group. I think we would have had a show tonight a year ago.
Yeah, because we opened on July 20th. So what? It is July 22nd, right?
Yeah.
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 So we opened 1 year ago.
Listeners, if you don't know Working, it's an amazing musical that's had a lot of incarnations based on Studs Terkel's book, which is a series of interviews with working people from various regions. So I don't know about you, JG, but for me, during this time when there's been so much discussion of what an essential worker is and how we value them and don't value them, I've been thinking about the show a lot. You know, there are so many musicals that I love that are about show business or about people who live in a way that a lot of people don't live. Thinking back to playing an iron worker, playing a cop who almost shot a black man and was so conflicted about it that he became a fireman. And just remember standing on that stage and thinking the story was so important, but also not in a million years being able to imagine where we are right now. It was really amazing to step into the skins of those people, knowing that they were real people and knowing that they were the kinds of people that we often don't see on a stage or in that way. So I was just curious about your experience with the show. I'd love to hear about some of the roles you played in it. I mean, I know, but I'd love our listeners to hear.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't thought about it since we left. You know, when I do a show, sometimes you put it away and you move on to the next thing, not taking away from the experience of what it was. But I was moved by what you said and the everyday people that we played in Working, specifically with the essential workers. It just made me think about how I am now when I go to the grocery store, to the little bodegas down the street. And it made me have conversations with them that I never did. In the past, I am sad, ashamed, I don't know, to admit that like I didn't necessarily try to build any relationships with them. I wanted to just go home and I'm tired. I was in the city all day. I live in Brooklyn. I just need to go back home. But during this pandemic, those essential workers are our lifesavers and they are taking chances every single day for a cause, feeding us and providing us care. And this is just through the everyday jobs that we take for granted. And you think about the characters that we played in Working. I played a Filipina nanny from the Philippines. And like I said earlier about wanting to play Filipina stories, tell Filipina stories, that was a dream come true with Working. That was what drew me to the show in the first place and asked my agent to get me an appointment because I wanted to tell that specific story. And I know a lot of Filipinos. Oh my God, I'm getting a little emotional right now. Thinking about Filipinos that have left our mother country to try and get a better life for themselves and for their families back home. They leave their own children back home so that they can work for these American families that may or may not respect them or take care of them or acknowledge them or their hard work. But that doesn't necessarily matter because what they want to do is give money and support to their families back home. And for me to do that in the Berkshires with a predominantly white American community is, and tell that story, I wanted to be that artist to do it. And I was so glad that that story was added to Working the musical, because that wasn't initially part of the musical from so long ago. And then Lin-Manuel wrote that song. And ever since I heard it, I wanted to do it.
And you did it so beautifully.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. The other character that I played was Roberta, a sex worker, which is, you know, not necessarily somebody that you typically think of in the workforce, but for human beings to have contact, physical contact with someone when they can't necessarily have the ability or bravery or just the relationships to be able to have a connection with another human being. That kind of sounds familiar right now.
Yes, it does.
The things that we've taken for granted are the hand holding with your your good friends, the hugs, the connection, the physical touch. Physical touch. I mean, psychologists talk about the importance of physical touch for well-being. And I'm very thankful to have a boyfriend. So we were quarantined together. But I know I have had friends that have not had any physical contact with people for 4 months. And what that does to a human being, it makes me very sad, very emotional. And I just hope for the day that like we can somehow, you know, get back to appreciating those things that we take for granted.
Totally. Did you have an experience in the theater that changed your life?
Why do I giggle? I always giggle just because it sounds so like, so many experiences. That's the thing that like, I don't know. Don't you feel like as difficult as what we do for a living is because we never know really about job stability, but like it's the golden ticket. I am so thankful for the career I've chosen as an artist because it just gives me the most satisfaction. Theater saved my life. Literally. I was so depressed in Chicago when I didn't find a way out of my 9-to-5 job that did not satisfy or fulfill me or give me purpose. And then a theater job gave me a ticket to find it. And so I'm always going to be grateful for whenever I have a job. Or whenever I have a gig. So that's one way. But theater is just like, think about your first theater experience. The first movie musical I ever saw was Sound of Music.
And can I confess something?
Please.
I saw that not too long ago. My boyfriend and I, we watched it. No. I've seen it many times.
Okay.
It's like, let's watch The Sound of Music. Really? Yeah, let's watch The Sound of Music. It's so good.
So when you watched it, who did you want to be when you first saw the musical, the movie? Did you have anyone in the show that you wanted to be, or did you just love the piece as a whole?
I love the piece as a whole, but I think I wanted to be Kurt.
Amazing.
Because I think I was already thinking, like, who could I play?
Nice.
And, you know, not this most recent time I saw it, but a couple years ago when I saw it, I remember as a kid watching Julie Andrews so much and being so amazed by her. And then when I saw it as an adult, it was in many ways all about Christopher Plummer for me.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's a genius. Look at what he's doing. But so much of it as a kid just went above my head. It's fascinating to see things again. But yeah, sorry, I'm totally taking over your answer to this question. But
no,
yeah, I love The Sound of Music.
The Sound of Music. That's why it's so, it is transformative. Like I grew up wanting to be Liesl. I wanted to be her so badly because she was an innocent, but like found love for the first time. And no matter what, till the day I die, I'm always going to be boy crazy. I'm always going to be boy crazy. And that was when I first like experienced what I felt love could be and how exciting it was. But then like a great piece of art, you see it again many years later and you appreciate something different, something new. I think once I saw that, I connected to it on a level that I did not realize how deep it was, but it really was that spark that made me start thinking about the possibility that music and singing and theater could be part of my life.
Could you tell me about a teacher in your life that made an important impact on you?
Well, yes. And you're going to laugh because you kind of planted the seed in me last year.
Yes, what? Totally. I have no idea what she's talking about.
Well, audience, I feel like you should know that when I first met Denis, I would see him in the rehearsal space, like finding like space. He would find a space for himself to connect. I found him like grounding, laying down on the floor with like books and like just relaxing. But I knew it wasn't relaxing. I knew it was some kind of like meditative state. And I talked to him about it. And he told me that it was Alexander Technique.
And yes, we'll probably be doing, I'm sure we'll do a whole episode on it, if not more than that, at some point.
Well, because it's so fantastic, it's amazing, and it's changed my life that during this quarantine, you know, everyone's like, people are trying to figure out what they can do during this time to take care of themselves and self-care. And one of my acting teachers here in New York, who I love, Joan Rosenfels, totally changed my life. She is incredible. she incorporates Alexander technique into her classes on like just a little bit. She incorporated a little bit. So after I met Denis and I saw that how it affected him and his incredible performance in working, I'm like, oh, I want to steal a little bit of that for myself. And with Joan Rosenfeld's class, and she incorporated Alexander, she introduced me to Elizabeth Castagna, who teaches Alexander technique, and she's been teaching a class on Tuesdays in the morning. And I have found a connection to my body, my voice, and just the way I am, I don't know if the right word is operating in space or like living with the space around me, that just feels more at ease than I ever have. And in this time where there's so much unease and so much stress, I'm able, through the Alexander technique, to find ways of connecting authentically to my body and myself that allows me to feel ease.
You have no idea how happy that all makes me. And I had no idea we were going to talk about Alexander technique today, but I'm so glad you found it. And it's one of the things I love the most that has helped me the most.
I appreciate you for telling me about it. It planted a bug in your ear, my ear, on the importance of it. And it's amazing the people that you meet along the way and the lessons that you learn, and you don't even realize it's a lesson at the time or it's going to help you later on down the line. But yeah,
aww,
you and Alexander technique is definitely one of them.
Well, the feeling is very mutual, and I'm going to turn the tables now with, I think, maybe a last question.
Okay.
I want to learn from you how you bring so much humor and lightness and joy into the rehearsal room while remaining so professional. I can sometimes take myself a little too seriously, and I feel like sometimes in my effort to ground myself and be professional, I sometimes lose some of the play and joy that we talked about earlier with the kids. So give me some of your secrets.
I think it was... my positivity does come from something that I said a little bit earlier about when you get to do what you love. And for so many years, I felt I didn't have a voice and I didn't admit to myself what I really wanted was a career in the arts. I was such a late bloomer that when I got the opportunity to do it, I saw how much I loved it. And it's a gift. The truth is, actors don't always, you know, jump from job to job to job. There are very few actors that do that. We go through stretches of time when we're not working, and the possibility of never getting a job again is real. And yet, we stick with it. I've been an equity member. I started at Disney World in 1999. So it's been 21 years that I've been a union member, and I'm so thankful for every single job I have, that if you audition all the time, you may not know when you get that gig, but once you get it, it almost feels like you're on vacation.
Yes.
That's the crazy thing. Like, okay, I'm going to be in the beautiful Berkshires for the summer, singing and dancing and telling stories. So I remember that whenever rehearsals start, that it is a gift. I get to do what I love to do. And I get to play with actors that have the like mind. You know, working in corporate America, I knew they weren't my people. Lovely people, but I knew they weren't my people. And there is a tribe of like minds. Even if we're all a bunch of crazy people together, we still want to tell stories for a living. And that is the ultimate gift. And that makes me always feel positive.
I couldn't love that more. And I'm going to try and take that with me and never forget it.
Well, what I love about you is a lot, but you value the work so much. It is a reminder that, sure, what we do is fine, and yeah, but the story that we're telling is important, and to give it justice and to do right by the characters that we create. So I feel like there's room for all of it, for all of us in there, and you know, we feed off of each other.
Totally. It's a balancing act, which is the name of one of my favorite podcasts that
And Lisa Lenning.
That partly inspired this. Yeah, hopefully she's listening, or I'll have to send it to her because it's true. I love her too. I listened to it a lot, especially in my year in London. And at that point I wasn't about to start my own, but I was like, this is really good stuff. And you can listen to a podcast while you're working out or cleaning or, you know, but she's, oh, right. School of Rock. Of course.
Yeah,
I didn't even.
Encouraged me. She practices what she discusses on her podcast. And it was one of those things when she told me about Balancing Act and I listened to it, the first one right away, I was already like, oh, okay, I'm changed. Got it. I see what this does. And I see like your podcast and this, you know, being positive and thinking about these conversations are so important for us to, as human beings, to support each other. And I would rather have conversations like these any day over divisive political conversations where no one's listening to each other. I can feel us like really connecting and listening to each other. And I want more of that in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had had a podcast like Annalisa's, even as a college student studying theater. And it's kind of what I'm trying to do with this too, is remind us that we're all more the same than we are different, no matter if, you know, you have a Tony Award or you're on your first non-equity job. And the struggles are not as different as you think. And that's actually one thing that I've learned as I've gone along in the business and I've gotten to work with some amazing people who've had amazing things happen. I see the insecurities they still have and the joy and gratitude they get when they get something new. And
Well, that reminded me of something that I read about recently about Taoism. And if you think about humanity as the infinity sign, you know, that infinity sign and where we are on that, there are people behind you and there are people in front of you in our careers and in where we are in our development. But we're still all moving in infinity. We're still constantly moving. So to if you feel like you are seeing someone that's in front of you and you want that, you'll get there, but you don't have to effort through it or feel bad as you're getting through it. Like, that's the truth is there's going to be people in front of you and behind you for the rest of your life and on the grand scale, infinity. So why not find a way to celebrate and honor yourself in the present moment?
And being jealous of them or wishing that you could have what is theirs isn't going to help you get there.
Absolutely not.
And that's something that I think Annalisa helped me understand, quite frankly. She really talked a lot about that, about wishing well for other people. And and it's so important.
And her balancing act has now led to having a baby.
Yes. Yes. Annalisa, I had no idea we're going to have a whole conversation about you, but I'm glad we are. Subscribe to her podcast if you haven't.
We love
Go
you,
back
girl.
And listen to it. JG, this was so much fun. I love, love, love you.
I love you too. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this.
And that was my chat with JG. This is a brand new podcast, so if you enjoyed our chat, please take a chance to subscribe, rate, and review it. And maybe tell a friend about it while you're at it. Episode number 2 features Olivier Award winner Lee Zimmerman. We chat about age diversity and being a student forever. I hope you can tune in. Stay safe, take care of each other, and I'll talk to you soon.